Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I'm John Summers Flanagan. I'm a co-host of this show along with Sarah Polinchek, who is here with me right now.
Hello, John.
Hi, Sarah. By the way, this show is sponsored by the Engelhard Foundation, thank you, and by NPEN.org, the National Parenting Education Network. Oh,
what's the title?
And the title of today's show is Teen Love.
Which I think is gross. I have two teens, and I don't like thinking of them being in love or having intimacy in their relationships. Ew.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mm-mm. Yeah, but you came up with the title.
It sounded good before.
Yeah. Okay, well, speaking of intimacy and intimate relationships, I suppose teen love in intimate relationships is not the first thing that most parents are thinking about when, you know, you're holding your baby. But that baby grows and becomes a teenager and becomes sexual.
Ugh, so fast. My 200-pound teen was a baby yesterday, it seems like. So it's hard to believe we're at this spot. So we have to talk about it. One thing we need to get clear up front. You and I come from a world where we use intimacy and, that word a lot. But I have found when I'm talking to the general public that they think that means sex.
Right.
So we need to clarify.
Yeah, we have a class at the university called Intimate Relationships. And I think a lot of people think it's just about sex.
That's how we lure them in. But it's not. It can be. I mean, intimacy can be sexual. But when we're talking, we're using it in terms of just a really close, connected relationship. It doesn't have to include sex. So everybody, calm down.
Thank you for that definition.
Yes.
I have to say that we're 30 seconds into the show, and you are helping people understand the difference between sexual relationships and intimate relationships.
We just go there.
You are rolling, Sarah.
Okay, let's dial it back, though.
All right.
Are we going to talk about today? So today, we as parents are going to learn ways that we can really support our kids as they start dating and becoming interested in romantic relationships.
Okay.
How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay.
I mean, we've talked about healthy relationships between parents before in a previous episode, and it seems like to me that teens are mostly just having crushes. And so, I don't know, do we need to talk that much, really, about teen love? It's really a passing thing. Kids have crushes all the time. I had a lot of girlfriends back in high school. I don't think that that's even relevant to my life now.
John, I so disagree.
Okay.
I know many of us think that, and we sort of poo-poo teenage love, and this is a cheesy word, but people say puppy love, which that's a dorky thing
that
to
is,
say.
That is.
But it is just not true. In fact, what we now know is that every relationship that teens engage in, if it's a significant relationship, can have the ability to shape the course of their future relationships. All of these relationships can really matter. So we need to take them seriously, and we need to figure out ways we can really be supportive.
So what I hear you saying is that highly mature and sophisticated young woman I was dating back in 10th grade is probably an influence on my current relationship of 33 years?
You just want to talk about your past dates, don't you?
No, I do not.
No, it's real. So depending on the kind of relationship that you had, whether it was healthy or unhealthy, can really set you up and change the course of what's happening.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm thinking back to a 10th grade girlfriend, 11th grade girlfriend. I'm thinking about what I might have learned from them. And I'm not coming up with anything clear.
Okay. For example, what if she was caring and kind and trustworthy and she listened to you and thought you were cool? Then that set you up to have high expectations for future partners and to search for people who had those same qualities, right?
I have been searching for people who think I'm cool. I've been doing that for a long time.
Could still happen. You never know.
Happen. No, and okay, I see what you're saying. What I would say back in terms of a summary is that it's really kind of like the neural pathways, our romantic relationship neural pathways in our brains are getting really in some ways laid down during our early romantic relationship experiences.
Yeah, you're learning both things at one time. I mean, you can be learning some of the positive aspects of a relationship and you can be learning some of the negative ones, and they will matter.
Okay, so the unhealthy relationship dynamics in the teen years are also important for learning.
Right. What if your relationship is filled with jealousy and possessiveness? I mean, that can really influence how a teen moves forward with the next person they date. So depending on what their life is like and other variables happening for them, it could be that they start to think, well, this is what I expect out of a relationship. I expect to have someone who's going to be possessive and jealous of me, and that's just how relationships are.
Okay. Yeah.
So they might, you know, look for a partner who has those qualities the next time.
Okay. Yeah. And I would bet that there might be some parallels with the relationships that we are forming during those teen years and the relationships that we're observing in our parents.
Right.
So if we are seeing some unhealthy things in our parents' romantic relationship, and then we experience some unhealthy things, we might really have that being normal would be really reinforced.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
It also could be the other way that you would have an unhealthy relationship and think, whoa, that was a bad experience. I want to make sure I don't choose those qualities again in a partner, right?
Right.
So it can, yeah, it definitely can go both ways.
I would think especially if you have access to some positive romantic relationship role models.
Mm-hmm. So this is a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, though, in the beginning of our podcast here, we've communicated to our listeners that teen love really matters. So what can parents do to support their kids as they navigate the wide world of love, romance, and dating?
Good question, Sarah. Mm-hmm. Especially because I am thinking that there are loads of teens who don't ask their parents to go out for coffee and talk about their relational challenges and to gain some advice from them.
Get an intimate advice
from
their parents.
Yeah.
Well, my boys are always wanting advice from me on how to have a better intimacy in their really.
Yeah.
That was loaded with sarcasm in case that doesn't translate over the air.
Okay. Well, I was going to sarcastically say to give them my number because I know they're not talking to you.
No, they are not. Okay, John, let's start by reminding each other, what are some good signs to watch for that indicate a healthy relationship? Now, as we're talking about these, we're going to just take into account that we're talking about teens who aren't maybe super forthcoming to their parents about what's going on. So we as parents have to be investigating a little bit and watching out for these signs mm-hmm. that we're about to talk about.
Okay, so healthy signs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know we've got probably a little bit of scientific research to support what we're saying, mm-hmm. but also, you know, people may disagree with us. That's okay. But here's some ideas. I think that in particular, it's important when teenagers enter into a new romantic relationship that they maintain other interests, you know, that they just don't get completely overcome
mm-hmm.
and have all of their other friends and activities and their grades and their homework and everything get overshadowed by the new and exciting romantic relationship. I think that would be unhealthy.
Yeah. We want them to have some balance in their life.
Okay. I also think that we wouldn't want to see our teenagers feeling a whole lot more anxiety. We wouldn't want to see them much more nervous and or maybe insecure about themselves.
Yeah, because actually there's some research out there that shows that teens who have serious relationships sometimes have more depression. Hmm. And the reason that happens is because there's so many, insecurities that come up. Like, does this person find me attractive enough? Am I attractive enough? Are they talking to that other person too much? Or are they talking to that other person more than me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these navigating these really big interpersonal things in a relationship without the experience and the skills that go along with it when you become an adult.
Okay, I see that. It's a little bit the opposite of what we might think, because we might anticipate that, in fact, if you're in a romantic relationship, you're going to feel better about
mm-hmm.
yourself.
Yeah, it's not always the case.
But mm-hmm. when you get close to somebody, then they see all your faults, and then you might actually feel more insecure.
Right, because teens tend to already have a big spotlight, a perceived spotlight on their faults. Perceived faults, right?
Their perceived faults.
Right.
I think that's quite possible.
Yeah.
So another signal, maybe some big behavior changes around following rules and other issues, but the rules in particular, you know, sneaking out,
mm-hmm.
right? your previously compliant child has suddenly become a rule buster and is defiant. And I think when those kinds of things are happening, you're seeing a big change in their behavior, but almost in their personality a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that would be of concern.
Yep, something to watch for. So, and then the obvious signs of abuse, another big indicator that we would need to intervene.
What do you think are the signs of abuse that a parent should be watching for?
Yeah, that's hard because we don't always get to see the way the communication happens. Mm-hmm. But if we hear or suspect abusive language, certainly the possessiveness and control, that would be a big concern. Signs of physical abuse, so certainly if we're seeing any marks on them, that would be a big source of concern.
Right.
And watching for diminished self-esteem. I mean, self-esteem is already fragile for this age, but if we're noticing big changes, that's something to be on the watch for.
Yeah, I guess we want those romantic relationships to mostly feel good, even though they can feel insecure too.
For sure.
So let's say we see something that really gives us pause and makes us concerned around that domain of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do?
Yeah, let's talk about that. It gets really tricky. You know, we certainly can't sit back and do nothing if we know our kids are in an unhealthy relationship. And yet, this is where it's really tricky, is there's a lot we can do to accidentally make it worse. So have you ever heard of the Romeo and Juliet effect?
Romeo and Juliet.
Come on, John.
Now, who are they again?
On air, I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, and I think that's a sign of contempt, which you have taught us in previous shows.
Good job, John.
That's an unhealthy thing to do in a relationship.
Yes. Okay, so back to Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's this thing that doesn't happen all the time in with all adolescents, but there's a pattern that happens when parents get too involved and forbid their children from seeing someone. It can make that forbidden partner seem even more attractive.
Mm.
Parenting is hard. Have I ever said that before?
You have. So the forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it becomes really, really more exciting.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
We need to be really careful.
All right, so there is some good news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that there's some things that parents can do without getting over-involved and maybe without pushing your child into that Romeo and Juliet effect. Hey, I can't even say it.
even though I know you know who they are.
I'm remembering. Okay, I don't want to bring that up. Okay, so one thing that we can do. I have an idea.
Okay.
We certainly can role model positive relationships
mm-hmm.
that are healthy.
We've talked about that. So if we're ever forgetting what that means, we can go back and listen to previous episodes because we've talked about how to be good role models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me something else that we can do. That's maybe something a little sneaky.
Sneaking in bits of wisdom is more effective with teens than just coming and telling them, hey, this isn't a good relationship for you, John. Get out of it. That's not typically as effective than if we sneak it in.
Right.
It makes it more palatable. And so my analogy for this is, I don't know if other parents out there have done this before, but I make my kids muffins and soups and different things, and I blend spinach and sneak it in. And the kids eat it, and it's good for them, and they don't really even know they're getting it, and the whole thing is just a lot more palatable.
And then they go to school, and they think, well, why aren't the muffins here green?
I know.
The muffins at home are green.
But just let me give you an example.
Okay.
So instead of saying, hey, I know Lisa, for example, your girlfriend, lied to you this weekend. You should break up with them. Mm-hmm. What if we just said, gosh, I bet that didn't feel very good. Mm. What was it like to be lied to?
Mm-hmm. So maybe just sort of reflect back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I'm hearing is to focus on listening well and reflecting back mm-hmm. to your child.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, you let them make the big judgments
mm-hmm.
instead of you having to be in that position of power. And it reminds me of this thing I used to do a lot with teenagers when I was working with them in counseling, or really with parents too, and that is if you hold one hand out and I hold out my hand and I push,
mm-hmm.
what do you want to do?
Push back.
Push back. And mm-hmm. that, I think, is part of the Romeo and Juliet effect,
mm-hmm.
is that you're pushing kids, maybe being a little controlling. And so you're saying be more like a mirror. Reflect mm-hmm. to them the kinds of things that you're noticing them experiencing, and then let them be the judge.
Yeah. And I think teens will think it's so cool to have someone that's listening to them. I liked that you used that L word. I heard you say that.
Mm-hmm.
We as parents can listen a lot more to our kids.
Yeah.
It's so tempting to just tell them what to do because we're so wise.
Okay. Tell me something else, though.
Okay. Another thing is that relationships are hard. We know that. And so for our teens to be going through some of this stuff, it love hurts, John. You're not going to sing now, right?
No, I'm okay. Not going to sing. You're not even tempting me.
So we need to not minimize the hurts. Teen relationships are real, so we don't want to say things like, oh, geez, you just dated for a month. Get over it. Or the other one, which there's so many more fish in the sea. I mean, that's just so invalidating, and it's not going to encourage your teen to use you as a source of support, which is what we want.
Right, right. The invalidation of emotion,
mm-hmm.
something that you and I as counselor types, it's like that's something we think is not good.
Nope,
it's not good. You know, at least start by validating your child's emotions, mm-hmm. and you can still have rules, and you can still maybe give advice later, but you might as well start by validating their emotions.
Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I have talked to my kids about this stuff, I always introduce it by saying, you know, I know it's super creepy for you to think about the fact that I might have ever had a boyfriend in the past. So creepy. And we just, you know, and you kind of make it funny. And then I'll just tell them a story about me. You know, I keep it, I might soften the edges of the story a little bit.
Sure.
But it just really, I don't know, it helps with that connection. And it helps so much more than just me telling them what they should do. It's just to say, ugh, I remember feeling like this. Have you ever felt that way?
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you're not your child's best friend.
No.
But to be able to have a mutually respectful relationship where you listen and then you share some stories, I think that really helps to develop the foundation of a good relationship so they can come to you if they do feel like they're in some tough shape.
For sure.
One other thing that came into my mind right now, Sarah, I'm guessing you agree, but I think that there are many opportunities that just pop up during a day or during a week when we can talk about relationships. And movies are one of the things that really comes to mind for mm-hmm. me, is that we can see really unhealthy interactions on movies, mostly,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally some positive interactions. We might bring those up to talk with our kids about, or we might be able to get our kids to talk about some of the unhealthy relationships they see in their classmates, mm-hmm. and that might be helpful too.
Yeah. You know, so this isn't necessarily a parenting technique that is written about or endorsed or is going to make me famous or maybe even popular with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I do is that in our family, we occasionally watch a movie together and we'll let the kids pick something, and they'll pick something that's a little pushes my comfort zone in terms mm-hmm. of the humor. I think it can be a little
yeah.
offensive for me.
Yeah.
But we watch it because it's kind of provocative. And then I say, okay, we can watch it. But you know, when it's too obnoxious, we're going to pause real quick or we're going to talk about it afterwards. And they roll their eyes and blah, blah, blah. But something will happen in the movie and I'll say, what do you think of that? And they're like, oh, we know it's bad. We know, you know, and mm-hmm. we'll, and I can get in a little what I call spinach in the muffin.
Mm-hmm. Spinach in the movie.
Yeah. So a moment where, you know, we're kind of using something that does cross that line of being a little offensive, maybe towards women or something of that nature, but use it in a way that reinforces that that is not our value.
I really like the idea of you getting them to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if they say, I know, then you might say, well, what did you notice?
Yep, add on
what,
a little bit.
What do you think might bug us, and maybe wouldn't be all that healthy. And mm-hmm. so have them articulate it. That would be cool.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes it works that well. Not always.
I feel like with these good communication skills that we're showing between each other right now, we're just kind of role modeling positive interpersonal behaviors.
Know. Aren't we so good? But as great as we are, we should move on to our money tips.
All right. You brought it up,
mm-hmm.
so you get to go first.
Okay. I'm going to just go off. I'm going to surprise you here.
Whoa. I'm surprised already.
This is just such a big deal that I'm going to do something and say something a little different that I wasn't planning on saying, which is that we teach this intimate relationships class at the university. And one of the things that we teach, because we know from our research, is that the ability to form a healthy intimate relationship is the number one factor in predicting happiness in life.
Mm.
I mean, how much bigger can you get? So really, everything we're talking about, at the beginning of the episode, we talked about why would we be doing a show on this? Well, because it's the most important thing if we want happy kids, and everyone wants happy kids. So learning this stuff is so important.
Yeah, we want happy kids and we want them to be happy adults.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So learning how to have a healthy, intimate relationship, number one.
Okay.
Okay.
I got a money tip, and it's sort of related to your, or it's unrelated to your spinach and the muffin technique.
Okay.
And that is, spinach and the muffin is very indirect, mm-hmm. which I think is great. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. Oftentimes we have to be indirect with our kids. But I think sometimes we need to also take some time to be direct.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think it's perfectly fine for parents to say to their teenagers, I want you to have a healthy, happy, loving relationship in your future. I want you to have somebody you can be honest with. I want you to have somebody who helps you feel better about yourself and makes you a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And really to say that you want those things for your child is one way of, I guess, instilling those expectations in them for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And when I hear you say that, it's still different because you're saying what you wish for them and what you hope for them. It's still a lot different than saying, you need to get rid of this current person and find someone better. Those mm-hmm. are two totally different messages. So I can see it being more palatable that you would just say, this is what I wish for you.
Yes. Yeah. And now that gives me a second money tip.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we don't want to wait until they're in a bad relationship to start
right.
talking about relationships. And
right.
I think, I hope we've given this message throughout this show, and that is, let's start early.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start when they're five. Let's
yeah.
start when they're eight. And start when they're young. And then keep talking about relationships, whether they're on television shows or movies or amongst your friends or things that you observe in each other. And you just keep on working and giving your children little educational experiences around relationships and
mm-hmm.
mutually respectful communication and all that stuff becoming
yeah.
an ongoing conversation that's
yeah.
happening once in a while throughout.
Yeah. I mean, every day we can have an example about what it's like to be a good friend, a good coworker, you know, a good colleague, a good classmate, all of those things.
And what it's like to be lied to,
mm-hmm.
what that feels like.
Yeah.
Not so good.
You know what I'm realizing?
No.
We haven't talked about sex since the first 5 seconds of the show. We need another episode on safe sex for teens. Ugh.
You're going to make me talk about that.
Yeah,
and I
think
tell.
We need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should also look forward to talking about resources because we're almost done here.
Okay, you go first.
All right. You know, I'm going to recommend an organization.
Okay.
And the organization is called the Dibble Institute. Not dribble.
Okay.
It's not about basketball.
Okay.
Or drooling.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Dibble, D-I-B-B-L-E Institute.
Okay.
They have a whole lot of different curricula on relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole focus of that organization is healthy teen relationships. I think it's a good resource. It might just be fun for parents to go online, check it out,
mm-hmm.
see what kinds of resources they have. They're pretty spendy, but then they could encourage their schools to buy those curricula and have them available for the school counselors or the school psychs and basically implement them in the schools.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I'm aware of that organization, and it's great.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So mine is actually the Center for Disease Control, so the CDC, because
Ooh.
They have, I know, they have a really good website on teen dating violence. And I think that if referring back to some of the concerns we had, if we know that your teen is involved in an abusive relationship, I think that might be a good place to start. And also, we need to have you find a professional, probably, if your teen is involved in a serious abusive relationship.
All right.
That might be a great time to seek out extra support.
Great resource.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sarah. And hey, thank you to the listeners out there. We have a relationship with you. And so I'm going to make an ask. I'm just going to say, rate us on iTunes. We thought when we started this show back in
2014.
I know. It was. Did we have a false start in 2014?
Yeah, we did. But
I think we did. Anyway, but now we are really rolling, and so we thought we were going to be the most popular parenting podcast on the planet, and we have not gotten that many ratings. And so, you know, I would like you guys to rate us on iTunes and to tell your friends and to share
mm-hmm.
that this is the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast.
I agree. Share. Help us out. Thank you.
All right,
let's both be quiet now. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.